Okay, everyone, thank you for being here again. Welcome to day two of the summer learning.
Oh, should I put it on? Just keep coming, also. Okay. Okay, you want to come sit down? Sure.
So yesterday we discussed some heavy topics and heavy questions, which I think was good. It's always good to talk about it, even the difficult things that are difficult to talk about, and to highlight them. Just talking about it itself is a good thing. And we talked about the whole general focus on a general tragedy that happened the first night of Hanukkah.
If you weren't here, it was recorded, so we'll send it out.
It was recorded, so yeah. We're going to be a podcast as well. Ramon Masper on his podcast stream, so it's available. But today, we're going to do something a bit different. We're going to focus on one particular very special person that's so dear to all of us at Binah and to so many others, and that's Yaakov Levitin. He worked at Binah so many years. He was a very, very close friend of our entire family and of so many that are here and so many that aren't here. But firstly, I just want to acknowledge, first of all, that Yaakov's parents are here, Harris and Mireille. I'm sure I speak for everyone, but the pain and the grief is unimaginable. And we just wish you only good things and strength and hope that you can take a tiny bit of comfort today, and just generally hearing about the unbelievable impact that Yaakov had on this community, which I know you didn't know at all. In fact, we didn't know at all. So much that is coming out now because it was done so quietly. So just a little bit of... I didn't realize about Chaitin would be here, so please feel free to interject anytime. Chaitin was a very, very close friend of Yaakov as well, and worked with him a lot. And so just a little bit of introduction. I mean, Binah is not known for getting together just to tell stories, but everything has a lesson. And especially in this type of situation, King Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech, tells us, V'hacha yitein el liboy, that the living should take heart, should reflect. Those that remain behind need to reflect and need to learn the lessons from those that... from everyone, but especially for those that were great and those that did so much and accomplished so much. And it's not just about telling stories and reflecting and reminiscing about working with Yaakov, but it's also learning from some of those unbelievable values and traits that he displayed in the different stories that we're going to share today. There's a custom, you know. Today's Friday, we're coming into Shabbos, and there's a custom that many people have on Motzei Shabbos, on the end of Shabbos, to tell stories of tzaddikim, of great people, whatever the case is. And the question is, why? What's the power of a story? Like, what's the depth in telling a story? And the answer to that is that the depth in telling a story is very important, because sometimes you can talk about a concept, you can talk about an idea, you can talk about a value, you can talk about something good, but it's theoretical. And we have with Shabbos. Shabbos is a time to reflect. Shabbos is a time to learn. Shabbos is a time we learn the parsha of the week. We learn to, we learn our own study of learning. We have time. We reflect and so on. But then Shabbos, the idea is we take it into the week. So what do we do on Matzah Shabbos? We tell stories. We tell stories of people who not only learned the concepts, but lived the concepts. And that's the depth of a story. The depth of a story is to tell a story about someone who lived the concept. And with Yaakov, I think telling the stories has another depth, has a really important lesson to it, because Yaakov was a regular guy. What I mean by, remember that, is he didn't consider himself, he didn't want to consider himself a rabbi or a great person, although we used to joke about it sometimes, but he was not someone who you could say lived on a pedestal, is one of the great tzaddikim, whatever the case is. None of us are, and he didn't consider himself that either. He's now obviously a Kaddish, a holy person, because he lost his life, al-Kiddush Hashem, but he was a regular person, and yet as a regular person, he had such an impact and lived with such unbelievable values. That's why I think we can tell our stories even with more emphasis, because we can really learn from them. So the idea of sharing the story is not just telling stories, and perhaps there'll be some lighter moments today as well, but it's about trying to understand how can we live like that? How can we incorporate those into our own lives? So myself, Rabbi Levi, going to try and share some things. I'm sure there's much more, but just some things. So one of the things, first of all, that encapsulates Yaakov really is just his humility, just a humble person. He liked simple things. He doesn't like to be, he hated being highlighted. I mentioned this the other day, but I remember this distinctly with a lot of things, but distinctly with the raffle that we ran at Binah every year, which he put a lot of work into, especially in the beginning, setting up the whole system. And at the end of the raffle, we'd normally done on a Thursday morning when I had a shir, a bigger shir, and we would we'd draw the raffle. But before that, I would like to thank the office staff and the people that were so involved in the raffle, that I always tell him to make sure he's there, and he'd always make sure not to be there, because he didn't want to be highlighted, he didn't want to be noticed. He would be somewhere in the office, and I'd scream, and I'd say, I hope Yaakov's listening, and all that kind of stuff. But he considered himself a simple person, which he wasn't, but that's where he considered himself. I'll tell you a funny anecdote, actually. He just hated he hated a fuss. So, but when he kept working for Binah right till the end. He was doing stuff on the side, but in the last time when he moved across to Chabad of Bondi during the day, so we made a special kiddush, and I convinced him that we need to make a special kiddush for him, which he reluctantly agreed. And we ordered extra food, as we do when we make a special kiddush. And I'm telling you, this is the first, and I hope the last time, it ever happened at Binah that the caterer forgot to deliver the food. So it ended up being a very simple kiddush, which I was upset about, but I'm not sure he was. And it was like him. It was a simple kiddush. When he was working at Chabad Bondi, he told me once a little story. He says he was working because he was working at Chabad Bondi, there was also, they have the Beis Din there, and they do conversions. And when someone shows up to the mikveh to convert, there has to be three dayanim, three judges of a Beis Din. But the Gemara is very clear. It actually doesn't have to be three dayanim. It's got to be one person that knows what's going on, but basically three men. It doesn't have to be who forms like a Beis Din. It doesn't actually have to be dayanim and all that, right? But then when they give the certificate out, like it says, it's signed by three dayanim. So he comes to me one day, I meet him and say, how's it going? He says, yeah, I've been promoted. I became a dayan in the Beis Din. But for him, it was like a big joke because he didn't consider himself. But, that was the kind of thing. So I just, and yet, as we know, and we'll talk about soon, he just had the most amazing impact on the community and on people and our institutions. And that's lesson number one in its own right. We don't need a big fuss with everything. Humility. Humility is a hard thing. We all have big egos, and that's just the way God designed us. And to be humble is actually an avoda. It's actually a real effort to be humble. Some people have it more, maybe naturally, but he really taught, I think, the concept of humility. You want to follow on from that?
Yeah, I think just to emphasize that point about the behind-the-scenes aspect about Yaakov. Like, he very much was not in the front. No one knew what he did. He didn't want anyone to know what he did. So many things that he did, like I probably don't even know. Like, things just run seamlessly. I've been there for sure, for many, many years. And the reason for that was Yaakov. He never was into social media. In today's day and age, everything someone does needs to be posted and highlighted, and everyone needs to like it and see it. And he really was not at all like that. In any way, it was very, very much behind the scenes, extremely behind the scenes, and that was his greatness. That he did so many things that people didn't even know that he did, and so many things just in Binah, many, many, many other things in the community that happened were a result of him, but no one knew it, and that's such a it's the antithesis of the values of today. Today everything's about publicizing yourself and putting yourself out there, and everyone needs to know about me. And he very, very much was the exact opposite. And that's such a great quality, which I think we can all think about a little bit. Doing things just for the sake of doing them, not for recognition, which is such an important thing.
So I want to move on to another topic, which is an interesting one, about being present and being mindful in something that you're doing, right? So just to highlight a little bit before I talk about some interesting stories about this. So,
can I just start?
Sure, please.
Let's throw something else. Because, yeah. I'm sure we'll get to the tefillin and mezuzahs more in detail, but... Sorry?
Well, no.
Yeah. Just what I was saying about behind the scenes, like a thought that came to me in the past week. There were 15 people, unfortunately, that were taken from us, but the other one that a lot of people are talking about is Rabbi Schlanger from Chabad of Bondi, who very, very much, one of his big things was putting on tefillin with other people. That was one of his big things. And sort of the line that came to my mind was that Yaakov made sure the tefillin were available, and Eli was the one who made sure people put them on. Right, and that's very, and usually the one who's making sure people are putting them on is the person that everyone sees, right? You see the pictures of the person in the street, and you watch him, you stop someone in the street, did you put on tefillin today? Where did the tefillin come from? And before Yaakov came to the scene, it was not as organized as it is now, let's put it this way, the whole tefillin and mezuzahs thing. And he really did so much for that department, and many people don't know what and exactly what he did, but it was just incredible how available tefillin and mezuzahs became to the community, that enabled people like Rabbi Eli Schlanger and others to then make sure that people actually have the tefillin and put on the tefillin. But he was very much the behind the scenes, the foundation of that, which is absolutely critical.
So that's a good lead into what I wanted to share. So just go back to about being present. So we know that in modern times they talk about mindfulness and being mindful and being present and having intention and so on, which actually is ultimately a Jewish concept. We have the idea in Judaism called kavanah, which is to focus on what you're doing and being present, whether it's davening or making a bracha. There's a story with the Fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab, who was once, it's a good way to bring this out, he was once holding a Fabrengen. And in that Fabrengen, the way a Fabrengen works, especially with the Rebbe, is that the Rebbe would talk a little bit for a number of minutes, say a talk, a sicha, whatever. And then they would sing a nigun. And then they would stop the nigun, and then he would talk again. And then that's how Fabrengen would go, back and forth. Talk, nigun, talk, nigun. So the Rebbe Rashab finished talking, and he motioned they should start a nigun. And the Hasidim sitting around, they really wanted to get... The Rebbe Rashab didn't hold many Fabrengens throughout the year. So when he was doing one, they really wanted to get as much content and as much capture, as much teaching from the Rebbe Rashab as they possibly could. So they started singing the nigun, and it was slow nigun, but they kind of rushed it up a little bit because they wanted to get to the end of the nigun, so the Rebbe Rashab would begin talking. And they figured that the main thing of the Fabrengen is the talking, not the nigun. The nigun is kind of just a little bit of a break. It's a kind of a inspiration, but the main thing is the talks of the Rebbe, and therefore they rushed it up in order to get there. And the Rebbe Rashab noticed it, and he was upset. And he said to them, that's not the way to do things. He says, everything you do in life, you have to be what's called a pnimi. Pnimi means to be fully there, and fully present. And he said, even if something is secondary, but while you're doing it, it's not secondary. When you're doing it, it's the most important thing. So maybe the nigun is to reach the next talk, but the nigun has to be sung the way a nigun is sung. You have to sing it properly, with a proper intent, with a proper focus. So I just say that because Yaakov was someone that whatever he did, he was fully focused on it and fully immersed in it. In fact, he would get lost in something that he was doing. So I'm going to use mezuzah and tefillin as an example. I'll carry you through how it all happened. So when we started, as Rabbi Levi said, it wasn't so organized. And I went to Yaakov, and there was someone in the community who wanted to get it organized. And I went to Yaakov one day, and I said, listen, it's come to me. I don't know. Sounds like a big project. This is the project. Someone's going to back it, and we'll make sure it's structured. We'll have the scribe of Shlomo Israel, and we'll put up a proper system. People can come. So I said, what do you think? Because I had to ask him, because I said, you're going to be the one running it, basically. So. And he was very excited. Why was he very excited? Because there's a separate thing. He was always excited about new projects and new things. And first of all, he researched it. He researched the whole concept of tefillin and mezuzah. He spoke to someone in Melbourne. He became a half a scribe himself. That's why he used to do things. He always used to study the project he was doing. And he set up a really good system of intake and output and billing. And the whole thing was very, very organized. But then when someone would come in, this is the part that's interesting, right? When someone would come in, needed tefillin checked or tefillin mezuzah checked, whatever the case is. So it's the whole process. So first of all, he had to schmooze with Yaakov. Yaakov had to meet him. It wasn't like, okay, we'll take your tefillin, we'll let you know, boom, thank you very much, goodbye. Who are you? It is sitting in Yaakov's office and schmooze with him, getting to know the person, became friendly with the person. There are many, many friends that Yaakov has, just from the tefillin and mezuzahs. And he had to connect with the person, explain to the person the various options, and really build a connection with him. I have to tell you that it used to drive me crazy sometimes. Because there was be honest, right? There's lighter moments today. Because there were many things that were waiting to be done at Bina, but he was fully there. Never rushed. This is something I'm sharing with you today because I need to learn from this. This is my weakness. Like, with a lot of things, I do tend to rush, and maybe that's not good. Or sometimes it is not good. because you're rushing something, you're not fully where you are because you're worrying about the next thing. But even though there was no next thing, it was talking to the person, it was really fully immersed in that project. That was the truth with everything. It was true even in small things. But it was certainly true. I remember it was highlighted in the Tefillin Mezuzah, and that's why he has so many friends. Because I've just heard so many people say what connection they had with Yaakov. And it didn't come because they were actually socially friendly with him or had a connection with him for whatever reason. It came because he helped them and he came into contact with them. And it normally led to being their friend. Why did it lead to being that? Because he was fully focused on them. He had the ability to build a connection with people. That is, of course, true. But it also had to do because he really was present in the conversation. He was present with the people. And I think that's something that we can really, really learn from. To actually slow down. To actually be present in what we're doing. Not to rush. Obviously, organization is important and all that. But not to rush and be fully there, because you actually make a real impact. And when you make an impact like that many times, although at the time that impact may be small, might be only one person, but it's the impact which is then multiplied every time you do that, and you end up having such an amazing impact on so many people. It's doing what we do with presence, with intention, not rushing, being present in a conversation. My wife will tell you I'm not so good at that sometimes. And it's really focusing on the other person. I just think I wanted to highlight that because I think it's really, really something we can all learn from in a very important way. You want to add to that?
You know, I think it's just, I mean, anyone who knows me and you knows that we're very, very similar. Actually, in a scary, sometimes we'll think of an idea and literally the other person will think the same exact idea. Yaakov was not similar to me and you at all in many ways. And this was definitely one of them, like the idea of not rushing, of taking time, being present. And like everything in life, hindsight is 20/20 vision. I wish we would have learned more from him that way, and we still can. Thank God we can try and incorporate that. But he was definitely the counterforce to our similarity. He was definitely the difference in the office. And it's important, I think, just in general, to realize that just because someone's very different than you, you should try and learn from them, because they have extremely valuable things to contribute to your character, which you don't have. And he definitely was that to me and is that to me now. The more I think about it now, how much I need to incorporate the way he lived his life in my life, even though he was so different. So it's just an important lesson.
Yeah, that's just to add to that. So like, he wasn't similar in the way also. Me and everyone laughs at it. Myself and Rabbi Levi, our punctuality is like everything. Nothing had been ever starts 30 seconds late. Yaakov wasn't particularly punctual, to be honest. And I was thinking about it a lot lately. And I think one of my resolutions is I need to learn how to sometimes be not punctual. It's going to be very hard, I promise you. It's going to be very, very hard. But I'm going to try. I really am. Because I reflected on this and I think, I'm not talking about it in a bad way. Like, if someone's waiting for you for a meeting, I'm not going to show up late because I don't think it's respectful. But how sometimes, if you're doing something and it needs a few more minutes and that means something is not 100% punctual, I'm going to try. I can't promise it's going to work, but I'm going to try. Maybe it doesn't matter. Can we work on that, do you think? I think we have to try. Okay. Yeah. So I want to move into another, and this is something we've all been talking about the last few days, but just to share a few stories, and some of them are light stories, some of them are beautiful, but just the idea of helping another person. And again, without knowing, people not knowing about it, just because it's another person. And it really hit me the other day with many stories, but one was particularly, I was walking into Binah just a couple of nights ago, I shared it with Harris. And the CSG guard was standing there, someone I know. Someone that's been around Binah for a while, I've had to do with him. He actually ran like the Binah Mizrahi sort of CSG group for a while. And I chatted with him, I always chat with him, he's a nice guy. And we just came up and he said, yeah, I knew Yaakov very well. I said, that's interesting, how did you know him? He says, well, I can't say I was his very, very close friend because I didn't have that much interaction with him. But I used to coach his son, Shlomo. He used to coach his son in basketball. And of course, because he's coached Shlomo in basketball, so then obviously Yaakov used to come pick Shlomo up, I guess, and they were chatting, and obviously Yaakov always chats and connects. And he says, just I was working in some field, I don't know what the field was, and I needed an internship. And I was chatting with Yaakov about it, and he says, I think I can help you. I have a friend that's in that field. And he went away, and he came back, and he found him an internship. just because he was his son's basketball coach. He got to know him. And there's countless of stories that are coming out like that of people just doing things for Yaakov, just doing things for people, just having an unbelievable impact on them and building a lasting relationship, but helping them out, right? So, you know, there's a... I've shared this with a few people, but I'll share it over here publicly. So there's an organization in New York and other in Israel, in these places, in very densely sort of populated Jewish communities, especially the more religious communities, there's amazing chesed organizations, right? There's amazing chesed organizations. So in New York, there's an organization called Chaverim. But because it's run by Hasidic Hungarian people mostly, it's called Chavairim, because that's the way they pronounce it, right? So me and Yaakov used to talk about Chavairim a lot. So I'll just explain what Chavairim is. So Chavairim is an organization that if anything happens to you, if you get locked out of your house, or you have a flat tire, or your battery dies in your car, or as bizarre as, and this is true because I've seen videos of this, bizarre of someone losing their rings down the drain, expensive rings, and they don't know how to retrieve them, you call Chavairim. And it's a whole bunch of volunteers, right? And they're there in minutes, and they'll come and help you out. And they have all these tools and machinery and all that kind of stuff. And they're an amazing organization. Okay. So we always say, you know, we need a Chavairim here, right? And Yaakov, I think, there's no question, if he would have lived in New York, he would be part of Chavairim. That's for sure. So, I know nothing about, I should have known more, according to Yaakov. I'll tell that story in a second. But I know nothing about technology, I know nothing about cars, and there's lots of things I know nothing about. So, and I used to rely very heavily on Yaakov. But if something ever went wrong with my car, and it happened once, I got stuck, my battery died in the middle of Dondi Junction car park, called Westville car park, or anything else happened with my car, I'd call Yaakov. And he would answer the phone, and I would say, "Is this Chavairim?" And he instantly knew, "So what's wrong with your car?" And I'm not the only one. There were many, many, many people. Just amazing how he helped people and helped institutions. I knew the institutions he was involved in, us, of course, Chabad Abandai, the Men's Mikveh, Sage. But now I'm actually meeting people who run things that they got Yaakov to run certain systems from it, who are now trying to figure out what they do because they don't know all the information. So many, it was very, very communal, that's number one. But there are some people that are very communal but not focused on the individual. He was both. He was focused on helping communities, communal organizations, so many of them. He helped them with this system, with that system, with this thing, but also individuals. If you needed help with something, it doesn't matter what area it was. If you didn't know much about it, by the way, he studied it. He researched it and he found a plan. And it's just an amazing, just an Avas Yisrael, that just real simple love of a fellow Jew, and actually non-Jews as well, because I've had a number of people that have told me, including my own neighbor, who he helped with the wiring together with my house, with the wiring of the internet wiring and all that, which he was devastated when he heard the news. But that just willingness, without fuss, without recognition, without fame, just to help individuals, and there's going to be more stories of that coming out all the time. That's just an amazing, amazing thing. I have a Thursday, everyone knows, I've been there, we have a Thursday morning women's shiur. Some of the group are older women who don't know much about phones and technology, to put it mildly. And Yaakov became their go-to. And they told me afterwards, who's gonna fix our phone? Like, he didn't want to be recognized in the group. He didn't want to be coming so I could thank him. But he made connection with the people coming individually. And so many of them, he became like the there was a woman who came, not to so many shiurim, but he got to know Yaakov. And every year for the last, I think, 5 years, Yaakov was in charge of, on his own, I didn't know this person even so much, of making sure she has a lulav and etrog for Sukkos. He'd always make sure, and he ordered his own arba minim, make sure that I should give it to him, he'll take care of it, make sure he gets the person, he'll bring the payment. It was his project, because it came up once that the person needs a lulav. Became his thing now for the last 5 years, I think it was. He did it every single year. Just little things. My mother was here once. My mother loved Yaakov and his family. And she had a neighbor. After my father passed away, my mother had a neighbor who was very good to her in a complex in Ruvel, in near Sydenham in South Africa. My mother was really trying to figure out what can she buy this neighbor when she goes back. to recognize her friendship. So I said, let's talk to Yaakov. Maybe he kind of has an idea. Right? So we spoke to Yaakov. Yaakov says, no, maybe we should get her a plaque with a saying of Pirkei Avot, I think it was, about friendship and all that, in a beautiful way. Yaakov says, leave with me, I'll get it done. By the time my mother was left, she had this beautiful, beautiful plaque that Yaakov had organized through some designer and some company, and she took it back, and Bernice, which is my mother's neighbor, just absolutely loved it. So whenever there was an opportunity to help people, it was just an amazing willingness to help another person just because it's a mitzvah to help someone else. Not for any benefit, not for any reward, not for any recognition, just because it's a mitzvah to help someone. And the lesson is obvious. Just look out for people who need help. There are some people that need help. Now, not all of us can do those kind of things that he could do, but we can all help in some way. Want to add to that?
Are you talking about learning new things?
I
think we sort of touched on it already, but the willingness to learn new things, this is a very big thing. Like, a lot of people, once they get a little bit older, you sort of like I know what I know in life. Like, I'm never going to know about this and that. He was never satisfied with what he knew. He was always willing to learn. I mean, I'm sure we'll get to the coffee soon, but like, he was willing to just learn how to do things and then new things. And I think it's just a very powerful lesson, just to not say, because I'm now 34 years old, so I know what I know, and that's it, right? There's many, many more things to learn, no matter how old you are. Like, you can always learn new things in life, and that's such an important thing. It's an important thing in Yiddishkeit also. Like, I mean, obviously, Torah is infinite, and you can always learn more Torah. But it's just to have a curious mind, the idea of just, not being satisfied with what you know and being willing to broaden your horizons, I think was one of his big strengths.
Yes, I'll take it a little bit further. So I'll tell you something he told me many times. Eventually, I listened to him a little bit. I need to listen more. But so I'll just take back. There's a general concept in Yiddishkeit and a general... There's a story of the Baal Shem Tov. And the Baal Shem Tov was once sitting with his Talmidim, with his students. The Baal Shem Tov famously said that whatever someone says, whatever something happens, anything that happens in life, anything that someone says, you can always learn a lesson. You learn a lesson in the way you serve Hashem and the way you behave and so on. So there was a... Baal Shem Tov was sitting with his Talmidim and there was a knock at the window. And it was some guy, it was in the thick of the winter, who had problems with his horse, I think. I'm not sure exactly the story, but I think his horse had got stuck in the mud, something, or his carriage had broken, something like that. And he asked if anyone knows how to help him. And they said to him, they turned to me and says, we don't know, we can't. Meaning they don't know how to do this. So the Rebbe used to repeat this story once in a while. So this Nanji looked at him and says, you do know, you can do it. You just don't want to. You can, but you don't want to. And Baal Shem Tov looked at his Talmidim and said, this is such a lesson for life. The neshama has infinite potential. People have more potential than they think they have. And in any area, but particularly in the serving Hashem, you can, you just don't want. And I'm not even sure if Yaakov knew the story or not, but he would tell me the exact same line. I became very, very reliant. Like, my knowledge of technology is very limited. Down to using a complicated copy machine. So I would sometimes walk into the office and say, Yaakov, I really need this for a shiur. Could you help me? I don't know how to do the double-sided with the staple. I do now, by the way. And he would say, come on, you got to be kidding. I said, no, I don't know how to do it. And he would tell me, you do know how to do it. I mean, come on, if you can give a shiur, what he's telling me. He'd say, come on, I mean, I don't mind doing it for you, but he would help everyone, but he also told me, you don't need this kind of help. Like, if you can, that's what he's telling me. If you can give a shiur in Gemara, you can work out how to use the copy machine. So eventually, sometimes I used to try, and when I worked, I used to go to him very proudly and say, Yaakov, I did it myself today. I just want you to know. But he was right. And I think he was right in a general sense, right? We have more, it was laziness on my part, because, Yaakov was there, so let him do it. But whether it was that, or whether it was things on the phone, or on the internet, he would say, you gotta, I said, what do I do? How do I fix it? He says, you gotta experiment. I said, but I'm scared if I experiment, I'm gonna mess up the whole internet and the whole computer. He says, no, nothing's gonna happen. Just experiment, try, look, press the link, right? I sent him an email. I said, am I supposed to do this? Am I supposed to press the link? Am I supposed to press the link? He said, come on, you can work this out yourself. It's not that complicated. So we have to help other people, but actually we have to empower other people also. Sometimes if it's simple, not only, the famous thing, you give someone a fish or you teach them how to fish, right? So there were certain things that Yaakov knew he'd never be able to teach me, and that's fine. And therefore, he would do it. But that's you know, helping people is one lesson, but also empowering people is another. And also understanding that we can. Sometimes we just have to try. That lesson is such an important lesson. We can do it. Anyone add?
Yeah.
Rabbi Chaitin, anything? No, you don't. I'll tell you another thing about it, also the perfection. Not my thing, but the meticulousness of how you would do things, like very, very particular of how it was done, down to the last detail. Just this morning, as I was thinking about it, just a funny scene came into my mind. Those who daven at Bina will remember this very well. It was for a while. But in COVID, so when COVID broke, Bina went into a whole different gear. Yaakov, of course, set us up a Zoom right in the beginning. I didn't know what the word Zoom even meant. As many people didn't know when COVID came, I think, right? He did, and he had to, but he had to work it out. And I was thinking, Yaakov, come on, we've got to do this quickly. People are waiting. He said, calm down. Let me see how this works. He set us up. He set us all up with a Zoom account and so on, and we started to. And eventually, we didn't have shul for a long time, etc. And eventually, they let us come back to shul in a very limited way. And the rule was, you can come back, and it has to be, you have to sanitize, you have to wear a mask, and you have to be socially distant. So what was it, 2 meters or something? I forgot what it was already, right? So leave it to Yaakov. He said, I said, Yaakov, we're starting shul, I think, on Thursday morning, whatever it was. He set up the whole shul. Each table had a wipes and a one of those things you call the sanitizers. And then I just laugh so much when I think about this because it was really funny, but he did it and it was easy. He went and he put masking tape in the whole shul. He created the squares. Remember the squares?
Mm-hmm.
He created the squares so that we all knew exactly where to be and to be in our squares so we'd be properly socially distant from the other person. It looked funny, but at the end it was very, because that was it. It was like down to the last detail. Everything that was done, like it was perfect. If he was preparing something for someone, I remember also like he would spend... Sometimes when we did weddings, he would prepare a ketubah, he would decorate it very nicely, he worked out a way to do it. If a couple didn't want to go to a fancy thing, he would actually do it himself, and he worked out how to do all these things, and I gave him the text of the ketubah, and then he would put flowers around, it was very beautiful, but everything was so perfect and so meticulous. Attention to detail, I guess that's the concept.
That's something else.
Yeah, sure, please.
There's an expression in, I believe it's from the Gemara, that if you want to know a person's character, you test their, kisoi, kasoi, and koisoi. Basically, you see what happens if they have money, you see what happens if they get angry, and you see what happens if they drink. If they drink alcohol, like what happens to them? You can tell us the person's character. Now, Yaakov wouldn't get drunk ever, I never saw him drunk, but, you know, Simchas Torah, Purim, say a little bit of L'chaim. In fact, actually, it's an interesting thing, he was a Levi. So you'll get an aliyah quite often. And when we used to do Mishaberachs at Bina, we don't do it anymore, but since COVID, but when we used to do Mishaberachs, he used to give him a matana every time, but it was a lot. So what he would do is every Shemini Atzeres at Simchas Torah, he would donate a very sort of fancy bottle of whiskey to the shul. And that was his accumulation of all the donations he gave throughout the year.
Just to grab you for a second, he would first research the whiskey.
That's right, yeah. It was really his day in many ways. And whenever he would say, again, he never got drunk, but whenever he would say even a little bit of L'chaim, just like, you know, you see people when they drink, if you're an angry person, you just get angrier. Or if you're a not nice person, you get more not nice. He would just get like extremely loving, like just like walk around, just extremely happy, extremely loving, very cute almost. Like, and it really brought out who he was in a very, very strong way. And it was just beautiful to... It was just a pleasure to be around him, actually. Some people, like, when they say L'chaim, you want to stay far away. He's the type of guy you want to be around him. He was just, like, very, very pleasant.
Very, very pleasant. And while you're talking about Shmini Atzeres, I'll just... Shmini Atzeres, of his story, for some reason, was very, very... He was very... Sukkot in general, but it was just, like, one of his special days. So now, for the last number of years, we actually do Shmini Atzeres. First night Shmini Atzeres, we actually don't do it at Bina. We do it at my house. There's a big crowd there, and he was always there with his family. But even before that, what we used to do Shmini Atzeres at Bina, so what we used to do is we would daven Ma'ariv, and then we'd go upstairs to the sukkah and make Kiddush and say L'chaim a little bit, and then we'd come down, do a quick hakafot, like aminagis, we do hakafas on Shmini Atzeres as well. And then people would go home, and then a few of us, sometimes myself, Rabbi Levi, Rabbi Chaim, would go up to the sukkah again, just to fabreng a little bit, and he would always be there together with Shlomo, and we'd continue fabreng. He never left. If there was action on Shmini Atzeres, Monastery, he was always there, and he would always be part of it, and it was just part of that whole beautiful thing. And then became that day, he would always give a special bottle of mashka, as Rabbi Levi said, and then... When it moved to my house, he would obviously be there with all his family. I want to just mention also that he was very, very, very busy with all these things. I mean, all these things took up a lot of time, helping people, helping institutions. But he was very focused on his children. I think it's such an important thing as well to understand. He spent time with them. He went out with them. He organized things for them, the activities. Him and Adina, they really valued the chinuch. He talked to me about it a lot of times. We spoke about education. I'm sure the school for sure, but he would discuss his children with me quite often. And that's an important thing. Sometimes people get very involved in others, and that comes at the cost of ignoring their family. You know, on Purim, talking about Purim, by the way, there was the... Before I get to what I was going to say, I'll come back into it in a second. One of the highlights for us in Purim is always waiting to see what's the Yaakov Levitin Mishlach Manot this year. Mm. Every year had a very distinct theme. Very creative. He was a very creative person. Just on many, many things. I don't know if you noticed a binah, which is it's a bit out of date now, which is my fault. But we wanted to recognize those that give monthly to binah. And we didn't want just a regular board. So came up with this amazing idea, because Bina is about learning. So if you look at the back of Bina on the one side, you'll see these books, these like a bookshelf, it looks like, with plaques, which are like bookbinders, or the back of a book, whatever. That was totally his idea. Saw it through, had it built, got the things, and so on. Also, when we bought the building, and we fundraised, again, we didn't which one a regular board. So it actually was him and Robert Gerber that came up with the idea, because Bina's about learning. But he executed in the most amazing way. You know that, I don't know if you noticed it, but there's like a thing, it looks like a page of Gemara. We've got the major donors in the middle and the Rashi and Tosfos on the side. But it looks exactly like a page of Gemara, and it's to recognize all those that participated in buying the building, originally buying the building. And that was, he did it, and he saved a lot of money, because actually it's not a very expensive thing. It's just actually it's a perspex on the behind and the front, and then he had this I don't know what you call it, A1 or A0 thing printed, and it goes in the middle, and it's just but it's beautiful. And I've had so many people coming from other organizations look at it and say, wow, this is like such an amazing idea. And they've taken a picture to take it back to their organizations, maybe they can replicate it. I don't know if they did or they didn't, but it was like, he was very, very innovative. How did we get the innovation? That was...
Some of his children?
Oh, yes. So Mishlach Manos. Yeah, so that, like just the cute ideas and the things he would come up. And I know when his kids had projects at school, he would be really involved in helping them build these like amazing projects and amazing innovative things. And just, oh, sorry, I know why I said Purim. So Purim, there's two mitzvot on Purim. One is about exchanging food, Mishlach Manot. And the other one is Matanas Levyonim, which is giving gifts to the poor. And I don't know, I saw somewhere many years ago, I saw this idea that they're two sides of the one coin. Because they both increase unity, increase friendship. That's the design to do that. But they're very, very different. Mishloach Manot is about sending to friends, people you know, people that are close to you. So your next door neighbor, your relative, your cousin, your friend, whatever, you send Mishloach Manot. Matanas Levyonim is really given to people who maybe you don't even know who they are, right? And the idea is that sometimes in Avas Yisrael, in loving another person, helping other people, there's two ways people do it. Sometimes people are very, very good family people. They really are dedicated to their family. And the community don't care about others. It's not their thing. Their thing is their family. Which is good. It's a nice thing. But they don't have space for other people. Some people, it's the other way around. They get really involved in the community and they ignore their family. Yaakov, really, interestingly enough, and he worked very hard at this, I think, was both. He was very innovative. He was very involved in the community. He helped so many different people, organizations, as we said, and so many random people and just people that he came across with. But he also very dedicated to his family. I know he's dedicated to his dear parents, but he found time for family. He was very, very focused on that. And that's a great lesson in its own right, to reach out and help other people, but to do it in a way where you're not sacrificing those things that are really a priority, but at the same time be able to do both. It's quite a feat. Anyone else? I'm sure there's much more things. Those are the things that came to mind. If anyone else wants to share, please do.
I have something.
Yes, please.
What you refer about him concentrating on everything he was doing at the time. I used to see him often on Shabbat because I live on our side of the Jordan. He was coming down with Kalev or another Sanhedrin. And if he would meet me coming back from Bina or anything, he didn't just say Shabbos and kept going. He stayed. He asked how the family is, how my husband is, how was the week, and then he would go. So he really gave it for the moment. That's my memory from him. It's always the moment and not in a rush.
Yeah. Very beautiful. Yes.
My interaction with Yaakov, just a little bit that I interacted with him, he looked after anything I wanted. I'd bring him for the mezuzah. And even when he moved to Chabad Bondi, he opened the gate. He told me, don't worry, we'll fix it, we'll do it. And more than anything, I thank you for sharing all these qualities because we've got a lot to live up to.
Mm.
So rest in peace.
Yes, that's for sure.
Just want to say something. It was a few years ago, I started a business selling custom-made shirts. So I'd measure people up and get them made in Thailand. And then I moved into suits and I decided I was going to start trying to get kapotas made. And somehow I spoke to Yaakov. Yaakov volunteered to be my first customer. I've only told this story once before. And they were taking quite financial risk. We're talking about hundreds of dollars for a kapota, and these guys hadn't made me a kapota before, so he was like the trial. And he agreed to be my first customer. In the end, so due to some hashgacha kapotas, I actually gave him the wrong bank account number, and it didn't go through. And in the end, it never happened, which is probably just as well. Because I'm not too sure it would have turned out as I thought it would, but I just wanted to mention that.
That's interesting. Wow.
That he was prepared to, you know.
I think it ties in the general thing. He was never scared to try new things.
Yeah, Yaakov became a regular member to the Ashkenazim.
Yes.
And there were a few occasions when we didn't have a sponsor for a kiddush, so he came forward, sponsored the kiddush.
Really?
And he bought Singleton whiskey. Now, that's not a Czech whiskey.
Well, that's so nice, right?
So, while you were talking, I did the forbidden and switched on my phone to look at my text messages with Yaakov. And I think it's something that we can all do because, sadly, that's the way many of us communicate with each other these days. And I just scrolled and scrolled and scrolled. Back years and years and years and years, and basically every second or third message from me was thank you very much, thank you very much. It was punctuated with very, very small words of gratefulness because that was my relationship with him. I'd ask him something and he'd respond very, very quickly or say, no, I'm sorry, I can't right now. I think we can all at some time or another open up our phones and just see the invisible relationship we had with him, invisible because time goes and memories fade. We've actually got it on our phones, the degree of connection that he had with each of us over so many years, over small things. But each of these things, like a thread in a tapestry, produces the most wonderful collective picture for us all.
Mm. Beautiful. Yeah.
Relationship things can be uneven, and I know that for my family, the things that Yaakov would do to help us, sometimes people would ask something that wasn't an area that they knew about. They would ask about mezuzot or different things, and Yaakov always had this way to give to people that never took away from them, never embarrassed them, never made them feel ashamed. And just when I remember a little thing, or one of the many things about Yaakov is he would always make sure at Bina that the women also had a l'chaim, so the men were always okay, but he would always look around for every individual person. It was just something that was in him that it wasn't enough that, but it was never enough unless everyone was okay for him.
Mm. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. Beautiful. So, now thank you very much for sharing that. That's beautiful. And again, come back to the beginning. There's so much to learn. And I think we should really try and like I say, tachlis, like we should try, everyone should try to take away something. Maybe not everything, but something that we can learn from these amazing qualities. We're all going to miss him very, very much. And of course, especially for his dear family, his parents who are here, his wife, Adina, his children, the pain is great, but we just wish them and wish all of us just a lot of strength and a small measure of comfort in knowing what kind of impact that he had. And let's all try and... We know the neshama is eternal, and the neshama is eternal particularly through learning from what that person stood for and try and continue on the greatness of Yaakov, each in our own small way. And we should merit to the time where we'll be reunited in Eretz Hashem, all together in happiness and in strength.
Amen.
Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you,
everyone. Have a good Shabbos. The program continues on.